Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, there are two big winners in New York in the race for the White House. The U.S. president is holding talks in Saudi Arabia. Press freedoms are reported on the decline in spots around the world. And Iggy Azalea has a new long-anticipated album.
It's been a year in the making. She wasn't pleased with it originally, so she reworked a bunch of songs, and so now the new album's coming out.
It's right here on The Voice of America. Billionaire businessman Donald Trump and former Secretary of State and New York Senator Hillary Clinton emerged as the victors from Tuesday's New York State presidential primary election. Trump, the current frontrunner for the Republican Party nomination, extended his delegate lead and vowed to press on with his campaign.
I want to just thank everybody. I have great, great admiration and praise for the city of New York and the state of New York. I can think of nowhere that I would rather have this victory. So we love you all. Have a great evening. We celebrate. And tomorrow morning, we go back to work. I'm flying tomorrow morning to Indiana. I'm going to Pennsylvania. I will be all over. So we're going to celebrate for about 2 hours. Then early in the morning, I get up and we begin working again. Thank you, everybody. And thank you, New York. We love New York. We love New York. Thank you very much, everybody.
Trump won over 60% of the vote in New York to 15% for rival Texas Senator Ted Cruz and 25% for Ohio Governor John Kasich. Clinton met with supporters after taking nearly 58% of the Democratic vote to 42% for her lone rival, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
You proved once again there's no place like home. You know, in this campaign, we've won in every region of the country. From the north to the south to the east to the west, but this one's personal. New Yorkers, you've always had my back. And I've always tried to have yours. Today, together, we did it again, and I am deeply, deeply grateful.
VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone has joined us here in the studio to talk about all this. Welcome, Jim. It's always great to have you the day after.
Hi, Susan.
Hey, what does Tuesday's vote in New York mean for the Republican camp?
Well, it was a pretty big night for Donald Trump. It reverses, momentum that Ted Cruz has. So Trump is going to be able to use this as a springboard, not only to keep accumulating delegates, but to build the idea psychologically among Republican supporters that he really is headed for the nomination. He may not exactly get to the 1237 number of delegates he needs before the convention in Cleveland in July, but I think winning in New York, maybe winning next week when five other northeastern states vote, is going to start to convince some Republicans that the time may come now to rally around Donald Trump as the nominee apparent. So, in that sense, New York could be a pivotal moment in the campaign.
Was it Cruz's remarks about the New York attitude that really hurt him?
Yeah, New York values. You know what? That probably discounted Cruz early on, so he wasn't going to make an impact. John Kasich, on the other hand, the Ohio governor, was hoping maybe to do a little better. He is not able to register right now with Republicans, and there are going to be growing questions as to why he is still in the race. He's hoping for a sort of contested convention in Cleveland, as is Cruz. In fact, that's the only way right now they can deny Trump the nomination, have it so that he doesn't have the delegates going in. It goes more than one ballot. And Cruz has done some spade work. He has lined up some of the people who might support Trump on the first ballot in Cleveland, but would switch to him on a second ballot. The whole point of the Trump camp now, don't go to a second ballot, win it on the first.
All strategy. And over on the Democratic side, does Clinton have it all sewed up now?
It's getting close to that. She sort of made a comment about that. And I'm also noticing, most importantly, from the Sanders camp now, some comments that they're going to see how they do next week. If they don't do as well as they hope, they will, quote, reassess. That's the first crack I've seen in the Sanders campaign saying, you know, we might have to look at reality. Here's what to look for in the next few days, though. Will the rhetoric between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders that was red hot in the New York primary, got kind of feisty there, will they be able to tamp that down? Because I think both sides are looking for that. They're then looking for a rapprochement they can come to. They're going to have to unite that party for the general election campaign. And, you know, the bad blood that exists, that's an obstacle to overcome right now. Which side goes first? It's always a question in politics. Let's see what the next few days bring if they can tamp down that rhetoric.
I noticed Clinton was kind of nice about Bernie Sanders in her remarks last night.
Right. But what we've noticed also is it doesn't take much of a remark from either camp to set the other off.
Start it over again.
But the math is so daunting for Bernie Sanders at this point. Really, it is. He'd have to win, over 73% of the remaining delegates to kind of catch her. And the other factor here, we've talked about it before, the so-called superdelegates, party officials who can vote for whomever they want at the convention, they are overwhelmingly going to Clinton. And within the last month, 33 more have signed on. So she has the momentum right now. Sanders will hang in, but at some point, they're going to have to come to some sort of understanding about how they bring the party together.
Well, hang in here with me for a moment, Jim, because Andrew Balchevsky here is our social media reporter, is also at the anchor desk. And so what do you have going on this, Andrew, with your social media friends?
Well, Donald Trump, in that piece we heard, he said he was going to celebrate for a couple hours and then it's back on the campaign trail. Well, his supporters are still celebrating this morning this afternoon on social media. They said they have it locked up now. This is a really big win for them, even though it was his home state. However, there are always the detractors, and so there are people pointing out that John Kasich won Manhattan, where Donald Trump's, you know, Trump Tower is and where he lives. So they're saying, well, you may have won by a lot, but you didn't win your home, you know, base.
How much effect is this all having, Jim, these tweets and things going out?
Well, you know what? The old Donald Trump, it would have irritated him, and he would have been attacking on Twitter. They have adults in the room now. He's brought in some new Republican operatives, and I'm noticing a big change in how he deals with this kind of thing.
Do you sense that, Andrew?
Sorry?
Do you sense that when you read his tweets?
Yeah, I think so. I sense that. I think he's, you know, realized that the nomination is getting closer and closer, and if he's going to be the nominee for president, he's got to change his tone. He's actually said that before. He said, well, I say these things on social media now because I'm an entertainer and I'm this and that. But when I'm going to be, you know, the nominee for president, I'm going to have to adjust my tone accordingly.
And you have one more thing to tell us about, some breaking news.
I do. Some breaking news that the U.S. Treasury has announced that Harriet Tubman, the noted abolitionist, will be on the $20 bill replacing President Andrew Jackson. There had been a campaign to put a woman on the $10 bill, and so they're saying now they're going to put it on the $20. They had gone back and forth on which bill it was going to be on, but I have a tweet here from Jesse Lerich, who is a communications person for Hillary Clinton, and I think this is great. He says, yesterday I voted for a woman to succeed our black president. Today we learned that Harriet Tubman will be on the $20 bill. I love America.
Okay.
So that's the kind of the sentiment that we're getting a lot on social media. A lot of people viewing this as a very positive step forward in far as U.S. currency is concerned, putting Harriet Tubman on the bill. They're also going to put some civil rights leaders on the $5 bill and some women on the back of the $10 bill. Alexander Hamilton will stay on the front of the $10 bill. Some people saying because of the success of the musical Hamilton, maybe that might be why he stayed on there.
Okay, well, thanks both of you, Jim and Andrew, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
European Space Agency's Venus Express orbited Earth's closest planetary neighbor for over 8 years until its mission ended in December 2014. In its final months, the spacecraft was sent deep into the Venusian atmosphere for a series of low-altitude orbits. Studying data of a previously unexplored polar atmosphere, ESA scientists found it to be pulsing with atmospheric gravity and planetary waves. The gravity waves were described as being similar to waves we see in the ocean, and planetary waves are linked with the spin of a planet as it rotates on its axis. The Venus Express data showed the polar atmosphere to have an average temperature of minus 157 degrees Celsius, which is up to 70 degrees colder than expected. And at 130 to 140 kilometers above the polar regions, the atmosphere's density was between 22 and 40% less than had been predicted. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
U.S. President Barack Obama is in Saudi Arabia. The two nations have been longtime allies, but in recent times there have been some tensions. White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas is traveling with the president and joins us on the line from Riyadh. Welcome, Mary.
Well, thank you very much. Nice to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you. What is at the root of these tensions between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia?
You know, it's a fundamentally different approach to one of the key challenges both countries face, and that is how to handle the political chaos, the terrorism in the Middle East, the political chaos, the sectarian conflicts. It's a fundamental difference. It is this. The United States' most pressing issue is to combat Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. Now, Saudi Arabia and other Arab states feel like the biggest issue is Iran and its destabilizing actions, the proxy wars it's fighting by feeding weapons to groups like the Houthis in Yemen, where the country's just fallen apart. And so the U.S. position is that's taking attention away from the real global threat, and that's Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. So as long as those two differences remain fundamentally, then the tensions between the two sides, or the disagreements, very intense disagreements, will continue, even though they're both committed to being allies and really the very same issues, both countering terrorism, bringing stability to that region.
The president is to attend the Gulf Cooperation Council meeting. What are you expecting out of that?
Well, that's a good question. I think, look, many analysts feel it's more of a reassurance to the public to come together and to reassure each nation that we are communicating, we are cooperating, we are working together, we are discussing things, even though we have disagreement, because really the situation is just a mess in the Middle East, in Iraq, in Iran, you know, Islamic State spreading beyond the borders. But the truth is, any solution, you know, the U.S. wants it to be a political solution, is not going to be an easy one. And there's no clear path forward at this point. What is the real, there have been some delicate and fragile ceasefires in Yemen and in Syria, but what is the game plan going forward? And the truth is, in the U.S., this is a presidential election, so Obama's here, and he's going to be in office just a few more months. And so a lot of the Arab allies want to know what they're dealing with and the level of commitment, especially in terms of defense. I think many Arab states feel like they need to really bolster the missile defense system because Iran continues to build up and build up. So at the end of it, maybe just some added military assistance, but no major breakthroughs expected at all.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mary Alice, for speaking with us from Riyadh and traveling with President Barack Obama.
Thanks.
Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter is speaking today in Riyadh, called on Gulf Cooperation Council nations to engage more in the fight against Islamic State. I spoke with Pentagon's correspondent Carla Babb, who is traveling with the secretary.
Well, the secretary and the secretary general of the GCC were both kind of closed-lipped on their remarks because they want to save any announcements for the presidents, because the leaders of the GCC and President Barack Obama are going to be speaking tomorrow. The big thing, the big takeaways, is that Secretary Carter wants to help get the Gulf Cooperation Council more engaged in the fight against the Islamic State and even more engaged in helping the Iraqis, because the way Secretary Carter views it, the Iraqi government has to succeed and has to be able to rebuild once the Islamic State is ousted, or more turmoil is just going to continue. The Gulf nations have been hesitant. They've always been concerned about the Sunni-Shia shift, the Iranian influence that could be happening with the political realm in Iraq. And so it's very difficult to try to get them to reach out directly to that government. But that was the goal. There weren't any announcements made on that front. There was a small announcement by the GCC Secretary General. He said that they were going to, the GCC and the United States were going to continue to do joint patrols. And that these joint patrols would be focusing on Iranian arms illegally trying to get into Yemen.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us, Carla, today.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up on International Edition, press freedom reportedly on the decline, and Iggy Azalea's song Team is a hit. World press freedom deteriorated in 2015, according to the annual rankings of Reporters Without Borders. And joining us on the line to talk about details is spokesperson Margot Ewan. Welcome to the program once again, Margot.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's always nice to have you. See, your World Press Freedom Index ranks 180 countries on indicators such as independence, rule of law, abuse, that sort of thing. What did you find in 2015?
So we found a further deterioration from the previous index that we published on 2014 data, and that there is a deep and disturbing decline in respect for media freedom across the globe. And this is can be attributed to the increasingly authoritarian tendencies of governments in countries like Turkey and Egypt, for example, tighter government control of state-owned media, even in some European countries, such as Poland, and security situations that have become more and more fraught in Libya, in Burundi, or that are completely disastrous, for example, as in Yemen.
You're calling this a new era of propaganda. What do you mean by all that?
I mean that information wars by governments in their control over the media, the disappearance of more and more independently run media in countries where authoritarian governments are increasing their control leads to more government-fueled propaganda and news rather than independent news.
Are you surprised by this turnaround?
We are disappointed that it has continued to worsen since last year's data. Whether or not we are surprised, we would hope for better, but it just shows a further worsening of an already bad situation that we reported on last year.
Do you have any hopes for the future here? Is there anything that should be done, can be done?
Well, when Reporters Without Borders publishes its World Press Freedom Index, which we've been publishing since 2002, it is a benchmark for countries around the world and how they rank in freedom of information and freedom of the press. And it is something that we feel is a useful advocacy tool to help and bring home points about which countries need to improve their records and how they can improve it. And we believe that it is an effective tool when we do advocate for the release of journalists who are being held all over the world for censorship. So we will hope that when we use this tool throughout the year until we publish the next ranking, that there may be some improvements due to world leaders feeling the effects of the negative press that they get when they see their ranking on the index.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us, Margot. Appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
It's the newest tool in the battle against diabetes, a high-tech electrochemical patch worn daily in a transparent band around the wrist to detect temperature, pH level, and glucose level from the sweat of the wearer. But it's more than that. When the patch senses the wearer needs medication, microneedles accurately deliver it from inside the patch. It was developed by Professor Kim Dae-hyung of Seoul National University.
다른 사람들 보는 앞에서 그런
Diabetics are very reluctant to measure blood sugar or get an insulin shot in public. However, this technology makes diabetes management painless.
The innovative device isn't yet available. However, Professor Kim expects it may take about 5 years to get it certified and on the market. There are well over 400 million diabetics worldwide, and the number is on the rise. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
Larry London of Border Crossings has joined us here in the studio, and he always comes by and talks about music with us. And today, we're going to focus on Iggy Azalea, the female pop singer. What's going on there, Larry?
Well, thank you, Susan. Yeah, Iggy Azalea is from Australia. She has been on the music scene for several years now, although she, you know, says that she's been rapping and making music for many years. But she was discovered with her big chart hit called Fancy several years ago. She was supposed to go on tour last year. The tour ended up being canceled. She wasn't very happy with the outcome of the album. So she delayed the release of the album. Her new album is called Digital Distortion. It is due out in a few months. And she's also announced that she will be rescheduling the tour that was canceled. So she hopes to go out on the road and promote the new album, Digital Distortion. She has been in the news a lot lately because of her relationship with a Los Angeles Laker professional basketball player whose name is Nick Young, who admitted that he cheated on Iggy.
Oh, you've always got the best stories.
I've got the dirt. So she hasn't been seen with her wedding engagement ring on recently, and she was asked just this week, what's the status of your relationship? And on Monday she tweeted, we are still together, we are still a couple, we're sorting things out, and I would ask that everyone respect my privacy at this very delicate, sensitive time.
Yes, I can understand that. Well, there's one song in particular you like.
Well, I like all of Iggy Azalea's stuff. But the new song that's made it to the charts from her upcoming album is a song called Team. My time wherever I go. I took a chance like I'm from Chicago. 100 plus in that Murcielago.
About to go. Turn it to the taco. Well, tell us a little bit about this song.
Well, it's got a lot of hip-hop and some rap. She's got a guest rapper on the song with her, and that's very typical of what Iggy does. She's guested with a number of different performers over the years. She's performed along with Ariana Grande and quite a few others. And so this new song is the first single from the upcoming album, Digital Distortion. I'm looking forward to the album. It's been a year in the making. She wasn't pleased with it originally, so she reworked a bunch of songs, and so now the new album's coming out.
Well, if she's so particular, she should be particular about her men, too, maybe.
Well, yes, and when her man cheated on her, that's the story, and he admitted it on video. Now, there's a bit of a controversy as to who leaked the video. There was a story that Nicki Minaj was behind leaking that video.
She comes out all over the place.
Yeah, she's a tattletale. Well, yeah, Nicki Minaj is everywhere. But anyway, I like Iggy Azalea. Iggy Azalea was also quoted recently as saying one of the ways that she got through the stressful situation of what's been going on is horseback riding.
Huh.
And she went horseback riding with a music friend of hers who's also been going through a stressful situation, Kesha. So the two of them have kind of buddied up. And they've been horseback riding as of late. But exciting times for Iggy Azalea from Australia. Her new album's about to be released.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Larry. Always love for you to come on by.
Well, thank you, Susan.
Thanks for joining us for International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States condemns the vicious murder of a television journalist in Turkey who worked courageously to expose the hypocrisy of the terrorist organization Daesh. The group, also known as ISIL, claimed responsibility for the attack that killed Zahir Al-Sharkat of Halab Today TV. According to Turkish press reports, the Syrian journalist was shot in the neck at close range while walking in the city of Gaziantep. Al-Sharkat, an imam who studied Islamic law at Damascus University, had received death threats from Daesh in the past. We express our heartfelt condolences to the family of Mr. Al-Sharkat, who is survived by his wife and young son, said State Department spokesperson John Kirby. Al-Sharkat organized protests against the Syrian regime in his home city of Al-Bab, where he also spoke out against extremist groups al-Nusra and Daesh. He moved in 2014 to Turkey, where his work for Halab Today TV exposed the bankrupt ideology of extremist groups like Daesh. This was Daesh's fourth attack on a Syrian journalist in Turkey. We stand ready to support Turkey as it works to bring to justice those responsible for attacks on the media, said spokesperson Kirby. Freedom of the press, including ensuring that journalists can safely report on the crisis in Syria, remains critical as reporters keep working to expose the truth about this brutal conflict and Daesh's atrocities.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.